Warner Brothers Pictures. A memorial plaque engraved with the words, "In tribute to the police officers of San Francisco, who gave their lives in the line of duty." Above it, a gold star engraved with "San Francisco Police." Superimposed over the star, a list of names alongside the years in which they died. The star is replaced by the tip of a gun muzzle. Through a gun sight is a girl in a yellow bathing costume. The girl dives into a rooftop swimming pool. A sniper takes aim from the roof of a nearby high-rise building, leaning the marksman's rifle, with a silencer over the end, on the ledge. His unruly blonde hair is ruffled by the light wind. He shifts the rifle to follow the girl as she does lengths, breaststroke, up and down the pool. As she swims, the sniper pulls the trigger. The girl flounders and sinks in the water. Harry Callahan emerges from a door onto the rooftop swimming pool. He has sideburns and swept back hair, wears a grey suit and sunglasses. Uniformed and plainclothes police officers are on the scene. Harry crouches down beside another officer to examine the victim's body, lying on the floor wrapped in a blanket. Clint Eastwood stars in Dirty Harry. He removes his sunglasses and looks over at the high-rise building opposite. Now Harry strolls down a crowded pavement in San Francisco and rounds the corner to face the opposite high-rise, a dizzyingly tall building with a black zigzag facade. The music is by Lalo Schifrin and the film is directed and produced by Don Siegel. On the roof of the high-rise, Harry peers down into a long, square chimney. He walks on amongst the ducts and cooling towers, climbs up onto a ledge and looks down into an opening. Below him, a pool of dirty brown water bubbles, and an extractor fan spins and sucks the steam out of the cooling tower. Harry looks up and climbs a ladder attached to the wall. The ladder takes him above the extractor fan. He walks across the mesh grate above the tower and over a metal walkway. Harry ambles along a walkway right round the perimeter of the roof and surveys the vast, flat expanse of the city spreading out towards the hilly horizon. As he saunters round, the glittering water of San Francisco Bay and the Golden Gate Bridge come into his view. He reaches the side of the roof that affords him a view of the rooftop swimming pool. By the edge of the pool, two uniformed police officers hoist the woman's body away, followed by the forensic officer, who holds the end of the stretcher and guides it down the stairs. Another officer holds the door open for them. Harry turns away, accidentally kicking something on the ground. He stops, squats down on his haunches, takes out his pen and uses it to pick up an empty gun cartridge. He drops the shiny metal cartridge into a brown envelope. Tucking the envelope into his jacket pocket, he notices something. He climbs up another ledge onto the highest level of the roof and approaches the television aerial. A handwritten letter is tucked between its metal prongs. Harry studies the letter. Later, in a wood-panelled office, the letter is projected onto a screen and read out.
Jesus.
To the city of San Francisco, I will enjoy killing one person every day until you pay me $100,000. If you agree, say so tomorrow morning in personal column San Francisco Chronicle, and I will set up meeting. If I do not hear from you, it will be my next pleasure to kill a Catholic priest or a...
The word nigger.
Scorpio.
The slide projector switched off.
Who's on in their minds?
Cokes.
Where the hell did he expect me to find $100,000?
You're not thinking of paying him, are you, Mr. Mayne?
The city of San Francisco does not pay criminals not to commit crimes. Instead, we pay a police department. Chief, who's in charge of this case?
Inspector Callahan. It's waiting outside.
The mayor picks up the phone.
Send Inspector Callahan in. Callahan.
Mr. Mayor, Inspector Callahan.
All right. Let's have it.
Have what?
The report. What have you been doing?
Oh, well, for the past 3/4 of an hour, I've been sitting on my ass in your outer office, waiting on you.
Damn it all, Harry, that's the mayor you're talking to.
Won't you sit down, Inspector Callahan?
Harry swaggers over to a chair and sits. Still standing, the mayor stares at him intently.
There's a madman loose. I've asked you what's being done. Fair enough.
We've got a dozen men checking identification files. We're checking on all known extortionists, rooftop prowlers, rifle nuts, peepers.
Mr. Mayor, we've arranged for rooftop surveillance and helicopter patrols, especially around the Catholic churches and schools and in the black area.
Ballistics is checking on the slug. We're pretty sure it's a 30-odd-6. 7 lands in blues, right-hand twist.
Sir. We're running a computer check on everybody in the files whose birthday falls between October 23rd and November the 21st.
Why?
Natives of Scorpio.
Thank you, Inspector. Did any of you mention this note to anyone?
The chief shakes his head.
How about you?
Nobody.
Your wife, sweetheart? Press?
Nobody.
All right. Give the message to the Chronicle. We'll agree to pay. We'll tell them we need time to get the money together.
Wait a minute. Do I get this right? You're going to play this creeps game?
It'll get us some more breathing space.
So it might get somebody killed. Would you let me meet with the son of a bitch?
None of that. You don't know what a real bloodbath.
I agree with the chief. We'll do it this way, all right?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Come on, Callahan, let's go.
Harry rises and heads for the door.
Callahan!
Sir?
I don't want any more trouble like you had last year in the Fillmore District. Understand? That's my policy.
Yeah, well, when an adult male is chasing a female with intent to commit rape, I shoot the bastard. That's my policy.
Intent? How did you establish that?
Well, when a naked man is chasing a woman through an alley with a butcher knife and a hard on, I figure he isn't out collecting for the Red Cross.
I think he's got a point.
The street outside bustles with activity. Dust and smoke drifts across, traffic streams along, and a tram glides past. Harry rounds the corner in his sleek car. A black man in shades and beret sits in a parked car.
Just take your mask away. Halloween season.
The man lights a new cigarette off the old one and drops the butt out of the open window onto the ground. Harry pulls up by the side of the road and climbs out. Removing his shades, Harry strolls into a burger bar and sits at the counter, where a cheery cook with a moustache serves a customer.
Thank you.
Inspector Callahan.
Usual?
No, the usual lunch and the usual dinner.
Well, what difference does it make?
Not much.
Harry faces away from the window.
Hey, Jaffe, is that tan Ford still parked across the front of the bank?
Tan Ford.
The cook looks over Harry's shoulder through the window.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tan Ford.
Engine running?
I don't know. How can I tell?
Exhaust fumes coming out of the tailpipe.
Ooh, that's awful. Look at that pollution.
Harry cranes his neck round to look.
Yeah. Do me a favor, will you? Call this telephone number.
Police department?
Yeah, tell him Inspector Callahan thinks there's a 211 in progress at the bank. Got it?
211. Got it.
Be sure and tell him it's in progress, right?
In progress. Yes, sir.
Now, if we'll just wait till the cavalry arrives. Oh, shit.
There's turmoil out in the street. Still chewing a mouthful of hot dog, Harry emerges from the bar and pulls out his gun. Seeing the black man backing out of the bank with a shotgun, Harry raises his weapon.
Oh!
The robber fires. Harry returns fire and hits him. Another man runs out of the bank, gun blazing, and leaps into a getaway car, which speeds off towards Harry. Harry fires and hits the windscreen, causing the car to plow into a flower stall. A jet of water overturns the car. The second robber jumps out of the car, and Harry shoots him. The second robber crashes through a shop window. Onlookers peep out cautiously from their hiding places. Harry lowers his gun and looks down to see his trouser legs spattered with spots of blood. Harry strolls as if nothing were wrong up to the overturned getaway car. The driver hangs lifelessly in the front seat. Harry walks across the street, oblivious to the spray from the smashed water hydrant. He bends down and lays his hand briefly on his injured leg, but carries on walking. People cower nervously as Harry reaches the robber, lying slumped against the edge of the bank doorway. The robber glances furtively at his shotgun, which lies just out of his reach on the pavement. Harry stands over him. The robber peers up at the barrel of Harry's gun.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But Ian, this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Harry smirks. The robber's hand wavers and edges closer to his weapon. He glances at it. Harry takes aim, and the robber looks back at him, resignedly. Harry bends down, picks up the shotgun, and walks off.
Hey. I got to know.
Frowning, Harry stops and turns back to him. He raises his gun and cocks it. The robber opens his mouth.
Oh.
The robber scowls. Harry walks off with a smile. Now a doctor attends to Harry at the hospital.
Well, Harry, it looks like we can save that leg.
I've got a couple running to my knee here, too.
Did you ever consider another line of work?
I really appreciate this, you know, Steve?
Well, it's okay. We patrol hill boys. We gotta stick together.
Nothing fancy now, huh? You know, just a little tweezers and mercurochrome.
Do I come down to the station and tell you how to beat a confession out of a prisoner?
Come on, Steve, I haven't got all night.
Might experience just a little discomfort, Harry, but if you do, just have your wife to fix a, Sorry, Harry.
What are you gonna do with those?
I'm gonna cut your pants off.
No, we'll pull them off.
It'll hurt.
$29.50, let it hurt. You can turn your back if you're embarrassed.
A police helicopter swoops through the bright blue sky over San Francisco. Uniformed police officers wave from the rooftop as the chopper sweeps past before arching away towards the imposing skyscrapers in the distance. The helicopter has touched down on a rooftop helipad, and Harry is leaning into the open cab door talking to the pilots. The white-haired police chief comes up, taps him on the shoulder and beckons to him. With a final word to the pilots, Harry follows him away. An armed policeman on the rooftop sees the chopper lift off and soar away. Harry and the chief exit the rooftop. The helicopter curves through the sky past the imposing skyscrapers, enveloped in a light grey haze. From the viewpoint of the helicopter pilot circling one high-rise building, two armed policemen stand guard on the rooftop, a giddy height above the vast urban sprawl dominated by white-walled apartment blocks. On the corner of another rooftop is another armed cop surveying the cityscape. The helicopter's shadow glides across the white side of the building. Now Harry enters the San Francisco Police Department.
Morning, Inspector.
Harry strolls into a large open-plan office where Bressler's making some coffee.
You want to see me, Lieutenant?
Here.
Hey, when the hell are you going to get a haircut?
Well, whenever you do. Look, who's got time? I was up till 3 a.m. checking the search patterns.
Well, put in for overtime.
That'll be the day.
That was a pretty good pinch you made yesterday. The chief was pleased.
He was, huh?
Yeah, he really was. He wanted me to tell you, well done.
I'll tell you how deeply moved I am.
How do you like that? I pass along a compliment? You could at least be a little bit polite. It might not even kill you to say thanks.
I'd much rather say thanks to a raise.
Hey, Harry, check communications. Some from Chicago. A gun nut.
Get right on it.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm putting somebody with you.
Turning back, Harry eyeballs a young black-haired man standing in Bressler's office.
What are you talking about?
You need a partner.
What's the matter with the partner I've got?
Nothing, except he's in the hospital.
So he'll be out in a couple weeks?
Say hello to Chico Gonzalez. He'll be working with you.
Yeah, you've got to be kidding. I haven't got any time to break in any newcomers. Why don't you do this boy a favor?
What do you mean?
You know what happens to the guys that I've worked with. Dietrich's still in the hospital with a bullet in his gut, and Fanducci's dead. So if I need a partner, I'll get me someone who knows what the hell he's doing. What's the matter with Frank DiGiorgio?
No way. Now, you're working with Gonzalez or you're not working. Now, that's straight from the fifth floor. You got it?
I got it.
Chico glances unsurely at Bressler and follows Harry out of the office.
If you see DiGiorgio, send him in here.
You from around here?
Yeah, but I went to school San Jose State.
Like ball?
No, I boxed. Light heavy.
Just what I needed. It's a college boy.
You haven't found one thing you like about me yet, have you?
Well, it's early yet. Get your degree?
Sociology.
Sociology? Oh, you'll go far. It's if you live.
I intend to.
Inspector Callahan. Just don't let your college degree get you killed. Because I'm about to get killed along with you.
Now remember that.
Hey, Hero, nice work yesterday.
All right, Fatso. Bressler wants to see you.
You're a sweet man, Harry.
Chico eyes Harry suspiciously and joins him beside a scale model of the city.
There is one question, Inspector Callahan. Why do they call you Dirty Harry?
Well, that's one thing about our Harry. Doesn't play any favorites. Harry hates everybody.
Limeys, Knicks, Hebes, Fat Dagos, Niggers, Honkies, you name it.
How's he feel about Mexicans?
Ask him.
Especially Spicks.
Harry winks at Fatso and wanders off. Chico follows guardedly. Now a church. The church has a clean white facade and two tall spires. A congregation streams out of the arched doorway. Children play and people bask in the sun in a park in front of the church. On the rooftop of a building overlooking the church, Scorpio skulks behind some chimneys. He looks down at a scrap of newspaper in his hand. Ringed in blue ink is a personal ad. To Scorpio. We agree but need time to get money. Be patient. He tears it up and lets the scraps flutter away in the wind. Putting on a pair of black gloves, he strides over to the far side of the rooftop, where he's stashed a suitcase. He opens the suitcase and takes out a gun sight, which he uses as a telescope to survey the street below. Through the gun sight, he sees a flamboyantly dressed black man flounce out of a building. Another man hands him an ice cream. The black man saunters effeminately across the street, chatting happily to his friend. Scorpio lowers the telescope, then lifts it again to follow the couple as they stroll across the park and vanish from sight behind a bush. Scorpio searches for them and hurries over to a better vantage point from which to scan the park. Using the telescope again, he casts his eye over the park. He rakes his hands frantically through his mane of curly blonde hair and hurries over to another spot. Scorpio smiles and looks through the gun sight again to spot the two men sitting down on a bench. He squats down beside his suitcase and begins to assemble the gun. He slips a silencer over the gun muzzle and tightens it. Two police officers hover overhead in a helicopter and spot Scorpio.
Hey! There's a guy on the roof over there, on Stockton Street by Washington Square.
He snaps on the gun sight, cocks the rifle and carries it over to the ledge. He trains his sight on the men in the park. The helicopter is still some distance away, a small speck in the blue sky. Scorpio takes aim as the chopper hovers directly overhead.
You on the roof. You there. Yes, you. Stop what you're doing. Turn around and put your hands in the air.
Scorpio stares wildly into the air, then picks up his case and runs for cover. The policemen watch him disappear through a doorway, and the helicopter sweeps away from the building. Now Harry and Chico drive through the streets at night.
What I don't understand is how the helicopter boys lost them. How the hell could they let them get out of the building without seeing them?
They were probably talking instead of looking like they were supposed to.
That's possible.
Tight-lipped, Chico gazes out the window as they glide past the garish illuminations of the nightclubs and strip joints.
Turn that thing up a little louder.
Additional information on the rooftop prowler last seen in the vicinity of Washington Square. He is an adult male Caucasian. Repeat, adult male Caucasian. Last seen, the suspect was wearing tan chinos, pale blue shirt, brown coat or sweater, dark gloves. He is carrying a tan suitcase, which probably contains a 30-06 rifle. This man is wanted on suspicion of homicide.
He's alone, he's there. I throw a net over the whole bunch of
suspect is armed.
I know what you mean. There.
What?
Tent suitcase.
Where?
I lost him. There he goes over there. Does that bag look tan to you?
I don't know. I haven't even seen the son of a bitch yet.
Let's go to Filbert and hang left. Look out for these people.
Get the hell out of the way, hammerhead.
Harry rounds the corner into a dark side street.
It was a tan suitcase. I know it was. I saw him. There he is, right over there.
I see him. Okay.
They watch the figure carrying the suitcase scuttle down a shadowy alleyway, and they pull up at the side of the road.
How do you want to work this?
You find another entrance. I'll go in here.
Okay.
They both climb out of the car. Harry pulls his gun out of his holster, cocks it, and creeps around the corner into the alleyway. He breaks into a jog and slips into the shadows. Inching carefully around a corner, gun at the ready, Harry spots the figure scamper off through a side door. Harry ventures out from behind his corner to stalk his quarry, vanishing momentarily into the shadows. As Harry stands by the doorway of a house, the light goes on in the window above him.
Anybody home?
Harry looks up at the window, holsters his weapon and creeps forward into the blackness beneath the window.
Hey!
Harry clambers up to peep into the house. Inside, a Chinese man with a moustache opens the case, sifts through a pile of clothes, and hands a present over to a woman with long black hair. The dustbin wobbles under Harry's feet as he continues to spy on the couple. The woman undresses.
Lousy creeper, Tom. You getting an eyeful, you goddamn pie hawker?
We ought to call the police.
I am a police.
All right, hold it!
Chico runs up, gun poised.
Up against the wall, right now, move.
Harry's attackers line up against the wall. Harry struggles to his feet.
Let him go.
Let him go?
You heard me.
Assaulting a police officer.
A police officer? Why, he was standing on that garbage can peeking in on Hot Mary and her boyfriend.
Ian, get out of here.
The men scarper. The naked Mary pulls the blind down.
How about the man with the suitcase?
It's the wrong number.
You know, I just had another thought.
Yeah? About what?
Oh, about why they call you Dirty Harry.
Harry glares at him and walks on. Chico follows and they break into a run. Harry wipes his bloodied nose as he hurries back to the car.
Inspector 71, do you read me?
This is Inspector 71.
Got an 804 in progress. California Hall at Polk and Turk Street.
10-4, we're on our way.
They turn round and speed away. Now, floodlights illuminate a tall building. A man perched on the roof peeps down at the crowds of passers-by and policemen gathered in the street below. Harry and Chico approach the chaos. They pull up in the midst of the throng and climb out of the car. Harry makes his way over to a group of firemen.
Sorry to bring you in on this. We thought it was your sniper, Inspector, but it turns out to be a suicide attempt.
The man on the roof closes his eyes. He plucks up the courage to open his eyes and look down at the street a long way below him.
Anybody try to talk him down?
Yeah, but no luck. But now that you're here...
I mean, I go.
I'd sure appreciate it.
Harry climbs into a cage on the end of a crane and is lifted slowly into the air. Chico stands beside the fireman. Harry yanks a lever to allow the cage to swing freely. The crowd look up anxiously. Harry is caught in the glare of the spotlight. Now, a long way above the people and traffic, Harry chews nonchalantly on his chewing gum and looks upwards to see the man's head poking out over the ledge. Viewed from a distance, Harry's silhouetted form glides up the side of the building towards the roof. The middle-aged suicidal man sweats nervously as he sees Harry float, as if by magic, upwards until he is level with him and the crane stops.
Try to get me.
Not me, no. You're the one who wants to get yourself killed, not me. Always happens with you guys, you know? At the last minute, you always want to grab onto somebody, take somebody with you. Down you go. Not me, brother.
Aren't you going to try to grab me?
A friend of mine was up about 20 floors with a jumper a few years ago. And the jumper grabbed him, they went off, and 20 floors down, just mashed them all over the paper. Couldn't tell which legs were with which arms were with which, and it was a terrible mess. I tell you, I almost threw up myself. I just like your name and address, that's all.
Why?
Well, like I said, it's such a mess down there afterwards, and it makes identification impossible. Even if they find your driver's license, all that blood and everything.
I think I'm gonna puke.
Oh, Now, don't do that, son. I mean, all those people down there looking up, fire chief looking up his face.
You rotten bastard.
The man leaps at him and Harry grips onto him tightly. Harry knocks the man out cold and tries to hook his arms round his, mouthing the words, son of a bitch. As the crane lowers them back down, the spectators point excitedly and the police try to keep them back. The crane touches down. Harry hands the man to a fireman and secures the cage. Chico holds it steady as Harry clambers out of the cage and jumps down. Walking away, Harry turns to Chico, breathing heavily.
Now you know why they call me Dirty Harry. Every dirty job that comes along.
The next day, Chico drives along and Harry sits in the passenger seat.
Inspector 71. Inspector 71.
This is Inspector 71.
Got something for you. Corner Sierra and Texas. A young boy. Negro.
What about him?
Shot in the face. Blew part of it away.
The crime scene.
Anybody know who the boy is?
His name was Charlie Russell. I'm his mother. He's only 10 years old.
A black woman, tears streaming down her cheeks.
620 Pennsylvania.
Harry goes to the body on the ground. An officer pulls back the blanket covering the face.
Inspector, this officer. Oh, Jesus Christ.
You better go check on the mother.
Reinecke, Sergeant Reinecke.
Harry stands up and sees a police officer standing on the roof of a nearby building. Harry walks over to a squad car and takes a walkie-talkie to talk to him.
Yeah, what do you have?
There's a 30-06 shell casing. He was up here all right.
Harry hands the walkie-talkie back and pats Chico on the arm.
Welcome to Hummus.
They walk off as an ambulance arrives. Now the flat grey exterior of police headquarters. Inside, the chief is brushing his uniform off with the clothes brush. In front of him is an open box containing a large rifle.
You know, the man who design blue serge uniforms for police departments has to sell these for a living. Well, 458 Magnum, huh? This thing will stop an elephant.
Yeah?
Apparently you like a little edge.
All I can get, sir.
Well, he's no elephant, Harry. He's no animal of any kind. Remember that. Mm-hmm. What you got, Lieutenant?
As you know, Chief, the blue flags represent all the units that are going to be on duty by dark tonight.
Double shifts and overtime.
Just at nighttime, daylight hours, we figured the helicopters to keep them off the roof.
I see.
We're going for high visibility. I've ordered all units to make themselves very noticeable.
Yeah, except in here, sir.
That's right, the North Beach area. We're saving that for him.
Have you found a good stakeout for yourself?
I think so. It's a building that overlooks the roof where they spotted him yesterday.
Something bothering you, Gonzalez?
No, nothing.
Well, speak up. You're among friends here.
Ah, well, it just seems like such a long shot that he'd come back to the very same roof. I mean, there are a lot of rooftops in San Francisco.
Most of them are locked, but this particular one will be open for him. You see, these sick guys have behavior patterns. We know for a fact they robbed the very same store 3-4 times in a row. Must appeal to their super ego or something. Scorpio strikes again. They like that feeling.
You know, there's one other reason why he might pick the same rooftop. He's got a very clear view of the St. Peter and Paul's Church.
And they're having a novena tonight.
Well, go on.
Well, the note. He threatened to kill a Catholic priest or a Negro. The Russell boy was black.
He may just figure he owes himself a padre.
Nighttime. A tall, rotating square pillar has the words Jesus Saves in red and blue neon letters written vertically down its four sides. Harry and Chico walk under its base. Harry talking into a walkie-talkie.
Inspector 71. We're in position to start our surveillance.
They're positioned on a rooftop overlooking the white-walled church. They scan the surroundings. A lighthouse and the white facades of the buildings stand out in the gloom. Harry sighs and looks through his binoculars. He sees a congregation file out of the church, each one shaking hands with the priest in the doorway.
How about that priest? Does he know he's being set up for bait?
Yeah, he wanted to. We told him we had a volunteer who wanted to take his place.
Who?
Never guess.
Yeah. Welcome to Homicide.
Chico sets up a spotlight on the ledge. Again, they survey the brightly lit facade of the church, the apartment blocks, and the shadowy corners of the rooftops below. Through his binoculars, Harry scans the illuminated skylights of the surrounding buildings. Sweeping his gaze down the side of a building, he spots a couple canoodling on a front doorstep. With a lascivious smirk, he lowers his binoculars to watch the couple walk away. Raising the binoculars again, he spies on a couple arguing in their front room, then sets his sights on the window of the apartment above them. A girl in black underwear enters the room. As if having forgotten something, the girl skips back out. The room stands empty for an instant, then the girl returns, this time wearing only her boots. Harry watches closely as the naked girl goes to answer the door to a young man and woman, both with long hair and hippie clothes. They go through polite introductions, and the man and the naked girl shake hands. Harry lowers his binoculars and shakes his head.
You owe it to yourself to love, little Harry.
Harry raises binoculars again and watches the naked girl usher her two visitors through the apartment. Harry whips the binoculars up to see a metal door standing ajar on the roof.
Son of a bitch took the bait. When I say now, you hit him with the light.
Chico nods. Harry picks up the gun and takes aim at the rooftop. A figure slinks through the shadows. The darkness obscures his features, but what light there is clearly picks out his outline. Harry keeps the gun steady. The priest closes up the front door of the church. Scorpio's head whips round. The Jesus Saves sign rotates slowly. Scorpio moves on through the inky blackness.
Now.
Chico turns on the spotlight. Harry fires, hitting the wooden fence in front of Scorpio, who returns fire and scuttles away. Harry fires again, but in vain. An ominous stillness descends, the only movement coming from clothes flapping lightly on a washing line. Scorpio jumps up and fires. Harry returns fire and ducks down. He cocks his gun and lies in wait for Scorpio to re-emerge. And when he does, Harry shoots. Scorpio falls back and spews gunfire upwards, hitting the spotlight. Harry and Chico duck down behind the ledge.
You all right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Scorpio sprays the neon sign with bullets. The letters spark and shatter. Harry and Chico huddle against the ledge. Cautiously, Harry and Chico straighten up. The metal door stands ajar. Avoiding the sparking electrics, Harry and Chico sprint across the rooftop into the brightly lit stairwell and tear down the stairs. Chico ducks down. Harry fishes out his handgun and they carry on their pursuit. Outside, a man crouches beside a dead body in the road. Police cars race up, screech to a halt, and officers pile out.
Call an ambulance, will you?
Officer Collins never knew what hit him.
Harry arrives and dashes over to a squad car.
All right, let's go. Let's clear the alley. There's nothing to see. Call headquarters. He's loose in North Beach somewhere.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
Harry runs off, pushing through the gathering crowd and dodging a police car. The next day, Harry and Cheek road and climb out of the car. They stroll up the steps towards the door of the police department building. On the door is a notice. Anyone entering this building is subject to a police search. In his office, Bressler opens a desk drawer and pulls out some photos of a young girl. He leafs through them and looks up when Harry and Chico enter.
Well, it's a whole new ball game, fellas. We grabbed a 14-year-old girl. Ann Mary Deacon. The bomb squad got a call this morning. Suspicious object in Golden Gate Park. It was addressed to the mayor. The lab just sent it over to us with this letter and stuff.
Ann Mary Deacon, buried alive.
That's right. The poor kid went to the movies last night. She never came home.
Double-crossing San Francisco police made me do this. Now ransom $200,000 and used tens and twenties.
One man with yellow bag. Southside Marina, Green East Harbor. 9 p.m. She has oxygen till 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. Red panties and bra. Nice tits, small on left thigh. Anything cute and you will force me to let girl die of slow suffocation. Signed, Scorpio.
Anything else in there?
Yeah. The mother identified the bra, the hank of hair, and that. The dentist identified that.
A tooth.
Said it was pulled out with a pair of pliers.
You know she's dead, don't you?
All I know is the letter says she'll be alive until 3 a.m. The mayor's out trying to put the money together now. He's using up a lot of favors, Harry. He wants to pay. No tricks.
Chico glances up at Harry, who stares impassively at Bressler.
We're looking for a bag man. You want the job?
Yeah.
Okay, you got it. I'll be in the chief's office at 6 p.m.
All right.
Hey, wait a minute. What about me?
You're out.
No cover, not even one man? Are you sure that's the way to do it?
No, I'm not sure. But those are my orders, all right?
No wonder they call him Dirty Harry. Always gets the shit end of the stick.
One more word out of you, and you're chopped off at the ankles.
Well, let's split the difference, huh? Give him the night off.
Get the hell out of here, both of you.
The pair slope off out of the office. Bressler returns to the photos. In a workshop, Harry assembles a radio mic. Chico has the receiver in his ear.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
What the hell are you yelling for?
All you have to do is whisper.
All right, Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow.
Okay, that's better.
It's good for 2 or 3 blocks. But like in a tunnel, forget it.
All right, Sid, what do I owe you?
Bring it back in one piece.
Now in the chief's office, Harry checks a bag of banknotes.
$200,000. Count it and sign for it.
Did you count it, Al?
Bressler shrugs and looks at the chief.
Did you count it, Chief?
Well, not my responsibility.
Well, I always knew I'd get rich on the police force.
Bressler and Harry leave.
Just make sure nobody takes it away from you.
They emerge from an elevator.
God knows how he'll contact you. He'll probably run you all over town. Now, you just go where you're told, do what you're told. Play it straight down the line, okay?
Okay.
They make their way through a door marked homicide and into Bressler's office.
Nothing cute, nothing fancy. Just pay the ransom money and report back here.
Okay.
Harry pulls out a flick knife.
You wouldn't mind if I borrowed a little of your scotch tape, would you?
Bressler reaches behind him and hands him a roll of adhesive tape on a dispenser. Harry uses it to attach the knife to his ankle.
You know, it's disgusting that a police officer should know how to use a weapon like that.
Harry pulls his trouser leg down. Bressler shakes his head.
Okay.
Now the tranquil Marina Green East Harbour at night. Lines of white boats are moored along the jetty. The flat water ripples slightly. Harry paces, hands in pockets, on the quay. Harry stops and turns his head absent-mindedly towards the sound, but ignores it and looks back at the harbour. Coming to his senses, Harry picks up the bag and rushes off. Bag in hand, Harry races along the quayside over to the phone booth by the water's edge. Chico listens to the ensuing conversation from a car.
Yeah.
You got a yellow suitcase?
Yeah, I got it right with me.
What's your name?
Callahan.
What are you?
Police officer. Hello? 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 Hello?
All right, police officer. This is how we play. I bounce you all over town to make sure you're alone. If I even think you're being followed, the girl dies. If you talk to anyone, I don't care if it's a Pekingese pissing against a lamppost, the girl dies.
Is the girl okay?
Just shut up and listen. No car. I give you a certain amount of time to go from phone booth to phone booth.
I ring four times. You don't answer by the fourth ring, I hang up and that's the end of the game.
The girl dies. What time you got?
9:30. Now listen.
You listen. I'm watching you. Not all the time, but you'll never know when or where. Now get to Forest Hill Station
as fast as you can. Understand?
Chico starts up the car and sets off.
I hope you're not stupid.
Harry slowly replaces the receiver. Harry jogs off down the road and soon reaches Forest Hill Station, a grand white-walled building with children playing outside. In his car, Chico watches from a distance. Harry enters the building and looks around. He dashes over to a cluster of public phones.
Callahan. Callahan.
Downstairs. Take the K car. Get off at church in 20th. Hurry up or you're blocked.
Chico motors off again. Harry hurries away past a kiosk and down a broad flight of steps. Rounding a corner, he leans on the white-tiled wall to keep his balance. A single-carriage tram approaches the platform. The tram pulls up. Reaching the tram, Harry shoves passengers out of the way, forces the closing door back open, and struggles aboard. He dumps himself in a seat to catch his breath as the tram moves away. The tram disappears into the tunnel. In the car, Chico adjusts his earpiece. Harry sits in the tram, still breathing heavily. Chico screeches round a corner. Harry looks at the holdall of money beside him. The tram pulls in at a station. Chico sits in the now stationary car, the wire of the earpiece dangling out of his ear. The tram trundles on and emerges from the tunnel into the open air. The tram pulls up. Harry gets off and runs over to a phone box. Chico listens in.
Callahan.
Yeah, you sound like you've had a good rest. You'll need it. I'm gonna give you a nice little run this time, and you better make it, because if you don't, dead girl. Yeah, public phone, hamburger stand, aquatic park.
Hubba, 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 pig bastard.
Chico sets off in the car. Harry sets off on foot. Chico speeds along the virtually empty streets and looks at his watch nervously. Harry rounds a corner and follows a tram track down a slope into a dark tunnel. Two hoodlums suddenly loom out of the darkness in front of Harry, stopping him in his tracks.
What's in the bag, man?
You dudes get lost now, you hear?
Screw the bag. Yeah, just give us a wallet.
Harry thumps one, points his gun at the other.
You don't listen, do you, asshole?
Terrified, the hoodlums scarper. Harry stares after them. He turns and carries on running towards the light at the end of the tunnel. He emerges to see an elderly man enter the phone box.
Hey! Don't answer that!
Hello?
Hello? Hello? What
the... Kelly!
Who picked it up?
It's just some old guy. I never saw him before.
You know Mount Davidson Park?
Yeah.
Go to the cross.
Chico reverses. Back at the phone box. Picking the bag up, Harry lollops off again into the night. He drives slowly up to the top of a hill and pulls up. On a dirt track, Harry stops running and looks around him, struggling to catch his breath.
I'm at the entrance to the park on Lansdale Street.
I'm going up.
Harry continues through the trees, whose trunks glow dimly in the moonlight.
Kids necking.
Boys or girls?
Now deep into Mount Davidson Park, Harry shambles up a slope, keeping his head down as he runs. He stops and totters exhaustedly on the spot for an instant, and addresses a young man.
I'm Callahan. My friends call me Alice, and I will take a dare. Well, Alice, when was the last time you were busted? If you're a vice, I'll kill myself. Well, do it at home.
The young man scurries away. Harry carries on running, slipping in and out of the shadows. Chico sits patiently in the car. Harry reaches the huge stone cross monument. He stops at the base of the cross and scans the area. He prowls around the monument, holding tightly onto the bag. Scorpio waits for him in the shadows.
Freeze. Just like a statue. That's right. One wrong move, anything, I don't care. I'll kill you and the girl both. Understand?
Yeah.
Drop the bag. Left hand. Let's see the gun.
With his left hand, Harry pulls his gun out of its holster.
My, that's a big one. Left hand, throat. Easy. Raise your hands. Come on, get him up.
Harry obediently puts his hands in the air.
Now turn, face the cross. Come on, put your nose right up against the cement.
Harry turns and stands facing the monument. The stone cross looms over him. Scorpio pads up behind him, lifts his shotgun, and strikes Harry on the back of the neck. Scorpio kicks him on the ground.
Oh no, you lift that hand once more, and I won't let you know where the girl is. Do we understand each other? Huh? Do we understand each other? Don't pass out on me yet. No, not yet. Don't pass out on me yet, you rotten oinker. Do we understand each other? If you care what happens to the girl, you better answer me. All right. Now listen to me carefully. I've changed my mind. I'm going to let her die. I just wanted you to know that.
Chico runs up through the woodland, still listening on his earpiece. Chico pulls out his gun and scrambles up the bank. Scorpio straightens up and looks down on Harry, his face hidden by a red balaclava.
Goodbye, Callahan.
Scorpio cocks his gun, but Chico gets the first shot in.
Chico, don't kill him!
They exchange fire, Chico behind a rock, Scorpio behind the monument. Still on the ground, Harry pulls the flick knife out of his ankle holster. Chico is hit. Harry plunges the blade into Scorpio's leg. Looking in horror at the knife and the blood streaming down his leg, Scorpio picks up the bag and staggers off. He trips and tumbles down the bank. He rolls over and over, and comes to rest at the bottom of the bank. Harry, blood trickling down the side of his face, wriggles and tries blearily to stir himself into consciousness. Scorpio too stirs and struggles to pick himself up. Harry heaves himself to his hands and knees, and crawls over to the gun lying on the ground. Scorpio pulls off his red balaclava and grips it to his blood-soaked leg. With difficulty, Harry grabs the gun and points it into the darkness. Harry collapses with the effort and gazes giddily up at the monument. Scorpio staggers into an emergency hospital. In his office, Bressler's on the phone.
The hospital report on Gonzalez looks okay, Chief. Yeah, well, he's a pretty tough kid. Harry Callahan, he's right here. He's got 2 cracked ribs. They want to do some more tests on him in the morning. Well, the son of a bitch really kicked him a couple of buttes, huh? I'm sending him home. Right, Chief. Chief says beat it, and that's an order.
Yeah.
Harry, the chief wants to know if I misunderstood his orders. Meaning, am I just plain stupid, or did I deliberately disobey him? He wants to know what Gonzalez was doing up there. He wants to know why we screwed everything up. Now, what the hell am I going to tell him?
Why don't you just start by telling him the truth? Tell him Gonzalez was banging orders from superior, me. And tell him he didn't know anything about it. And if when this mess is over, if he wants my badge, well, he can have that, too. You wouldn't have a belt of booze around here, would you?
Bressler reaches into a drawer.
Lieutenant Bressler's office. Yeah. Yeah, put him on.
What is it?
It's a park emergency. They say they just treated a guy who has a knife wound in the leg. Yeah, doctor. What'd this guy look like?
Long blonde hair. Medium build, about 150 pounds. Pale complexion.
You mean he didn't give you his name, huh, Doc?
No. They usually give a phony name in any case. But I've seen him someplace.
But Doc, it's very important you try to remember. There's a 14-year-old girl who's suffocating.
I'm trying to think. It was, I believe he works around here.
Excuse me, Doctor. Could you give him something for his chest? He's in terrible pain.
Yes, just a moment.
Harry follows the doctor over to a medicine cabinet.
Christ's sake, you'll be dead in an hour.
I'm trying to remember. I forgot who he is. When they had football, he used to sell programs at the stadium. I think the groundskeeper lets him live there.
Live where?
There.
The doctor goes to the front door and points across the road.
He's our stadium.
Harry, a bandage over his ear, looks back at Fatso, nods to the doctor, and they return to the car. The headlights of the car flash in the pitch blackness. The headlights are switched off. The car pulls up in front of a wire mesh fence, and Harry and Fatso climb out. They approach the fence. Fatso fiddles with the lock on the gate.
Illegal entry, no warrant.
Looks like we climb.
Too much linguine. I'll find another way.
Fatso walks off. Harry grips onto the mesh and climbs hand over hand up the fence and hoists himself over the top. He struggles over clumsily and jumps down. Panting heavily, he moves on. Scorpio's eyes are lit up in the blackness. Harry makes his way through the darkened stadium. He pads lightly down some steps. Scorpio's eyes move slightly to the right, alert. Harry comes across a wooden door labelled Groundskeeper, Private. He reaches forward and pushes it gently, then pulls out his gun and cocks it. He stands back and raises his foot. He kicks the door in and peers into the pokey, dingy bedroom. The walls are covered with press cuttings and posters. A luminous clock on the wall with the word Belfast on it. Gun poised, Harry narrows his eyes and ventures further into the room. He stops and notices a pot on the hob of the cooker. He touches it and quickly pulls his hand away. Harry looks up and rushes out to investigate. Scorpio limps hurriedly through the darkness. Below, Harry emerges and gallops up a flight of steps to give chase. He stops and gets a fleeting glimpse of Scorpio slipping through the shadows further along the curved corridor. Harry jogs at a steady pace after him. Scorpio lollops along, flailing his arms and his injured leg wildly as he runs. Cloaked in darkness, Harry stays on his tail, passing black letters painted on a wall saying, "Ladies out." Scorpio scrambles up some steps and emerges into the spectator stands of the open stadium. He hops down the steps of the aisle. He hobbles along between the base of the stand and the running track around the perimeter of the stadium. Harry reaches the stands and trots diagonally across the seats towards his prey. Scorpio stops to look back, then slips to a gateway in the perimeter fence and heads out towards the centre of the pitch. Harry follows him, stops, and raises his gun.
Stop!
Fatso turns the stadium floodlights on. Caught in the merciless glare, Scorpio puts his hands in the air. Harry takes aim. Scorpio flips up in the air and falls flat on his back. Harry advances.
Go on out and get some air, Fatso.
Please, no more! I'm hurt! Can't you see? I'm hurt! You shot me! Please, don't! Let me have a doctor! Let me have a doctor! Please, give me a doctor! Don't kill me!
The girl, where is she?
You tried to kill me!
If I tried that, your head would be splattered all over this field. Now, where's the girl?
I want my
own. I said, where's the girl?
I have the right for a life.
Where's the girl?
I have rights for a life.
Harry puts his foot on Scorpio's blood-soaked leg and presses down. Scorpio writhes in pain on the ground. An aerial shot shows them as a dot on the vast grass pitch, obscured by the shroud of mist and the dingy blackness of the night. Early the following morning, Harry waits by an ambulance. Silhouetted against the cold light of dawn, Harry strolls away and looks down on the Golden Gate Bridge, huge and imposing, the occasional car gliding across it. Below him, two white-coated ambulance men can be vaguely discerned in the grey mist. Uniformed police officers gather round to watch the two ambulance men carry a young woman's naked, lifeless body over to a stretcher and cover her with a blanket. Harry turns away and stares moodily over the bay. Some time later, Harry wanders into the San Francisco Police Department, his face still bearing faint signs of his injuries. He approaches the door of the district attorney's office.
Harry Callahan said it was urgent.
Oh, yes, Inspector. The district attorney has been wanting to talk to you. It's Inspector Callahan.
Have him come in, please.
Will you come this way, Inspector? May I bring you in a cup of coffee?
No, thanks.
She ushers him into a room where two men wait for him, one sitting in a chair, one bent over a desk, busily writing.
I'll be done in a minute. Have a seat.
Harry sits down.
I've just been looking over your arrest report. A very unusual piece of police work. Really amazing.
Yeah, well, I had some luck.
You're lucky I'm not indicting you for assault with intent to commit murder.
What?
Where the hell does it say you've got a right to kick down doors, torture suspects, deny medical attention and legal counsel? Where have you been? Does Escobedo ring a bell? Miranda? I mean, you must have heard of the Fourth Amendment. What I'm saying is that man had rights.
Well, I'm all broken up about that man's rights.
You should be. I've got news for you, Callahan. As soon as he's well enough to leave the hospital, he walks.
What are you talking about?
He's free.
And you're letting him go?
We have to. We can't try him.
And why is that?
Because I'm not wasting $500,000 of the taxpayers' money on a trial we can't possibly win. The problem is we don't have any evidence.
Evidence? What the hell do you call that?
I call it nothing. Zero.
Are you trying to tell me that ballistics can't match the bullet up to this rifle?
It does not matter what ballistics can do. This rifle might make a nice souvenir. But it's inadmissible as evidence.
And who says that?
It's the law.
Well, then the law is crazy.
This is Judge Bannerman of the appellate court. He also holds classes in constitutional law at Berkeley. I've asked him for an opinion. Your Honor?
Well, in my opinion, the search of the suspect's quarters was illegal.
Evidence obtained thereby, such as that hunting rifle, for instance, is inadmissible in court. You should have gotten a search warrant. I'm sorry, but it's that simple.
Search warrant? There was a girl dying.
She was, in fact, dead, according to the medical report.
But I didn't know that.
The court would have to recognize the police officer's legitimate concern for the girl's life. But there is no way they can possibly condone police torture. All evidence concerning the girl, the suspect's confession, all physical evidence, would have to be excluded.
Harry stares at them both incredulously.
There must be something you can get him on.
Without the evidence of the gun and the girl? I couldn't convict him of spitting on the sidewalk. Now, the suspect's rights were violated under the 4th and 5th and probably the 6th and 14th Amendments.
And Anne Mary Deacon, what about her rights? I mean, she's raped and left in a hole to die. Who speaks for her?
The district attorney's office, if you'll let us. I've got a wife and three kids. I don't want him on the streets any more than you do.
Well, he won't be out there long.
What is that supposed to mean?
I mean, sooner or later he's going to stub his toe and then I'll be right there.
This office won't stand for any harassment.
You know, you're crazy if you think you've heard the last of this guy. He's going to kill again.
How do you know?
Because he likes it.
Now, Scorpio limps alongside a plywood fence sprayed with the CND symbol and the words "Down with Pigs." He has a homemade CND symbol on his belt buckle, and he gazes whimsically at kids playing on a climbing frame. Harry, in sunglasses and casual clothes, hovers by a cluster of men playing a board game and monitors his prey from a distance. Scorpio's smile fades as he spots Harry, and he lumbers away up some steps. Now in a strip joint, a naked woman writhes on a plush double bed above the bar. Scorpio sits at the bar, bathed in the red light filling the joint. He looks over his shoulder at Harry, sitting in front of the stage sipping a drink. Scorpio turns back to his drink and drains his glass. He rises, slaps some money down on the counter, and lumbers away past the stage, where a band are playing and naked women perform erotic dances. Inside the club, illuminated signs announce Roaring Twenties Amateur Topless Contest. Scorpio emerges and limps down the crowded pavement. Back in the strip joint, Harry rises and leaves. He wanders out and passes a club advertising totally nude college co-eds. Next day, under a bright blue sky, Scorpio hobbles through a maze of pipes and industrial machinery. He looks over his shoulder and hops on the spot, before lurching on towards a run-down shack. Lurking inside a basement underneath the shack, a black man with glasses sees him approach. Scorpio enters the shack and shambles to a derelict workshop, over to some steps. The man peers up at him from below.
You sure you ain't been tailed, man?
Yeah.
The man turns and walks away. Scorpio lopes down the steps and follows him through a filthy pane glass door into a separate room. Scorpio hands him a wad of banknotes. The man flicks through them and looks up.
You really want $200 worth?
Every penny of it.
With a jerk of his head, the man gestures Scorpio to follow him. The man picks up a wooden chair and dumps it down on the ground.
Might as well be comfortable. Go on, sit.
Eyes wide and maniacal, Scorpio sits on the chair. The man loosens Scorpio's tie and puts on some gloves.
Relax. Take it easy. It's gonna be all right.
Now in a hospital.
That's gotta be him. Okay, come on, come on.
Sir, excuse me, sir. Are you claiming that the San Francisco police did this to you?
I swear it, as God is my judge.
Why would they do that, sir? Why? Why are they harassing
you? I don't know. They tried to frame me with the Deacon girl murder, and now they're trying to murder me, and look at me. Just look at me. I'm supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, and just look at what they did to me. Everywhere I go, cops follow me, and just look at me.
Just a minute, nurse, please. Let me ask you one more question.
Sir, did you see the man that did this to you? Yes, I did.
Can you identify him?
Yes, his name is Callahan. He's a big cop. Works homicide. Callahan.
In the chief's office.
Now, that's a rerun from the 4 o'clock news. Since then, he's given a statement to the Chronicle. And he claims you've been following him, and you beat him up. Well, what about it, Harry?
You want my star?
I want an answer. Have you been following that man?
Yeah, I've been following him on my own time. And anybody can tell I didn't do that to him.
How?
Because he looks too damn good, that's how.
Now, before I let you go, let's get one thing straight. I don't want any more surveillance.
Well, neither does he.
What does that mean?
Good night, sir.
Harry visits Chico on a rooftop hospital ward.
Go ahead, try him. Guy makes him at the place I eat all the time.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Bressler about being on permanent with me. So at least you know you get a spot when you get out.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I am coming back, Harry.
Oh.
Nah, doing a lot of thinking about it. Well, I have a teaching credential, and I figure, what for, you know?
Time for therapy. You hang in there now, huh?
Harry shakes his hand. Chico's wife rises to leave.
Bye, honey. See you tomorrow, same time.
Chico nods and glances up at Harry before the nurses wheel him away. Harry and Chico's wife head for the exit, and Harry politely holds the door open for her. They go down a zigzag concrete staircase to the bottom of the building.
You know.
What?
He's leaving. I thought I could take him. No class.
Don't ever say that.
What?
Just don't ever low-rate yourself.
What I meant was, whatever it takes to be a cop's wife, I'm just not sure I'm making it. Even he tries, and these bastards, you know, pig this, pig that. Oh, but maybe it's when I watch him walk out that door at night, and I think, what if this is the last time I ever see him again? Look, am I the only one? I mean, doesn't it drive your wife crazy?
No.
Yeah, she got used to it.
No, she never did, really.
Well, what then?
She's dead.
Oh, please forgive me.
She was driving home late one night and drunk across the center line. There's no reason for it, really.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Look, I want you to tell Chico that I understand, you know, him quitting. I think he's right. This is no life for you two.
Why do you stay in it, then?
I don't know. I really don't.
She stares after him anxiously as he walks off. At night, Scorpio shambles along awkwardly, a bandage on his nose and bruises covering his face. He stops, looks around, and spies a liquor store across the street. Scorpio lurches on and enters the liquor store, where the elderly, plump proprietor is reading a newspaper behind the counter.
Hiya. Let me have a 50 cigarettes, please.
What the hell happened to you?
My wife's brother. I hit her, so he hit me several times.
569.
You're the guy that's been robbed all these times, aren't you?
14 times the last 3 years. Last 2 times they sent him out of here on platters.
Yeah?
I'm getting to be a pretty good shot. And I always keep it right here, right where it's handy.
Please. I scare easy.
Scorpio smashes the bottle over his head and he falls behind the counter. Scorpio robs him, searches the drawers, pockets some more money and grabs a bottle. Vaulting over the prone shopkeeper, Scorpio dashes out of the store. Now a yellow school bus, with a luggage rack on its curved roof, chugs along a road up the hills overlooking San Francisco. The woman bus driver pulls up and opens the door to let the kids off. Scorpio scrambles up stone steps and jumps onto the bus.
Everybody out who gets out here?
Hey, school bus inspector. Hiya, kids.
Just 1 minute. I'm not allowed to have anybody in
here. Oh, I'm authorizing you, Mrs. Sosa. Let's go, huh?
What are you doing? I don't know you.
Hear me, old hag. I'm telling you to drive or I'll decorate this bus with your brains.
I gotta take my guitar.
Where? Just get started. I'll tell you where.
He tucks his gun back into his belt and turns round to the remaining children.
All right, let's have some fun now. All right, who knows a song, huh? Everybody knows a song. How about you?
You must know a beautiful one, huh? Come on, sing for us.
Oh, my darling, had a farm.
E-I-E-I-O.
And on his farm he had some ducks.
E-I-E-I-O.
The driver is frozen with terror behind the wheel as the bus carries on up the quiet mountain road. Now flags flutter in the breeze on tall flagpoles outside the elaborate grey stone facade of the City Hall. Bressler comes out on the balcony and looks down on the open square below. A dark-coloured car pulls up outside and Harry climbs out. Bressler beckons him. Harry strides towards the building and enters the grand, opulently decorated foyer, bustling with people in suits. Removing his shades, he climbs the broad, elegant staircase. Reaching the top of the stairs, Harry makes his way to the mayor's office and enters. Bressler comes off the balcony to greet him.
Honey, this is Inspector Callahan.
Oh yes, the mayor's waiting.
They walk along a dark corridor to the office.
What's up?
Another note from our boy.
Who's he grabbed now?
That's the trouble, we don't know yet.
The mayor's on the phone.
Jet must be fueled and ready to go in a half an hour. Skeleton crew. They must be volunteers. That other man is dangerous. Well, here, I'll read you this note, which was delivered at 8 o'clock this morning. To the city of San Francisco, you have double-crossed me for the last time. I'm warning you to have my $200,000 and a jet airplane ready and waiting. I will call mayor's office at 1 o'clock and tell you about the hostages, who I will be happy to kill if you don't do exactly what I say. Scorpio. Well, you better have somebody standing by. It could be a false alarm, but don't count on it.
Mr. Mayor, there's a call for you on line 2. I think it's the one you've been waiting for.
The mayor replaces the receiver and switches on the speakerphone.
This is the mayor.
I've got 7 kids from the Parton Street School. All right, now listen. I got the bus. And I've got...
Come on, honey, now back in the bus. That's it, girl, back in the bus.
And I've got the bus driver. And here she is. Just tell him.
It wasn't my fault. He had a gun, Mr.
Just tell him your name.
This is Marcella Platt.
Now, you can check up on that if you want, but I don't see any point in that. I'm not bullshitting, and you know it. It's very simple. I've got the kids, and you start screwing around, the kids start dying. Is the plane ready?
The jet is being fueled and ready to go to the airport. The money will be there by the time you get there.
All right, now listen. Very carefully. I'm going to be driving along nice and easy. Just me and a busload of kids. I'm going to turn off on the Sir Francis Drake Boulevard on my way to the Santa Rosa Airport. I don't want to see any police cars, helicopters, whatever.
Now, if you got the guts to play this game by the rules, the kids will have a nice little plane ride.
Well, where are you going?
I'll tell the pilot when I get on the plane. No alerts, nothing.
I guarantee you, you will not be molested in any way. I give you my word of honor on it.
Marcella Platt, Miss Jackson.
Callahan?
Willing to take the money to him?
When are you people gonna stop messing around with this guy? He's gotta be stopped now.
He's got a busload of kids, and I can't take that chance. I gave my word of honor on it, and he will not be molested. And that's a direct order, Callahan!
Well, you can just get yourself another delivery boy.
He heads for the door. A small herd of dark brown buffalo graze contentedly in a field beside a road. Along the road trundles the yellow school bus. The bus goes over the Golden Gate Bridge. It's dwarfed by the enormous struts and pillars. Inside the bus, Scorpio conducts, waving his hands. The children bob their heads as they sing. The pillars of the bridge flash past, but soon the bus joins the busy highway, where it drives steadily along in the inside lane. The bus enters a tunnel that has a colourful rainbow painted over its mouth. Terrified, the driver keeps her eyes on the road.
Row, row, row your boat. What's the matter with you, Mr. King? Row, row, row your boat. Guess what? I'm sick. Are you sick? What is it? Oh, row, you're going to kill all your mothers. You're going to die in Oxford City. I'm going to kill all your mothers. Oh, I'm going to rest. Row, row, row your boat. Gently down the sea. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is water.
All right, now get the right hand, man.
It's not right to do children that
what?
Way. You're going to hurt.
Damn, I don't need your advice. Just drive the goddamn bus and get in the right hand lane.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily.
They approach a road sign indicating San Quentin, Sir Francis Drake Boulevard, second right.
There's a sign, Sir Francis Drake Boulevard.
Take a right here.
Then there is a sign! Take the right of Sir Francis Drake Boulevard!
Do it!
Not this one, not this one.
The bus turns off the highway onto the slip road. Gazing out of the window, Scorpio's grinning face falls. A figure stands nonchalantly, hands in pockets, on the bridge stretching over the road.
Jeez.
As they approach the bridge, the figure comes into focus. It's Harry. Scorpio grabs the driver's shoulder.
What the hell is he doing up there?
The bus slips in behind a Volkswagen Beetle. As the bus passes under the bridge, Harry jumps onto the roof. Scorpio scrambles over to a window and peers out, then pulls a gun and points it upwards towards the ceiling. Scorpio fires through the roof, missing Harry by inches, then shoves the driver out of her seat, takes the wheel and steps on the gas. The bus swerves out to overtake the Beetle. The bus barges the car, then lurches away. Scorpio twists the wheel, barges the Beetle off the road, then starts a zigzag erratically from side to side. Harry holds onto the luggage rail, his sunglasses still in place. The terrified kids, too, cling on for dear life. Harry leans upside down over the windscreen waving his gun, but heaves himself back up as the bus swerves to avoid an oncoming car, and then heads straight for a wire fence. Plowing through the fence, the bus skids to a halt, throwing Harry off the roof onto a heap of gravel. Scorpio kicks the front door, then rushes to the back door and kicks it open. He clambers out and staggers away. Harry picks himself up, rubbing the dust out of his eyes, and sees Scorpio scrambling towards a large, derelict wooden building. Harry runs over the mound of gravel and gives chase. Scorpio nips between the building and a yellow dumper truck. Scorpio races up some wooden steps. Below, Harry too mounts some steps. Looking down on him, Scorpio opens fire. Harry returns fire, and the bullet rips into the rickety wooden structure. Scorpio gallops on, along a wooden tunnel beside a conveyor belt carrying piles of rubble. Scorpio stops and lies in wait, gun raised, for Harry to enter the tunnel. Scorpio shoots, showering Harry with dust. Harry shoots back and jumps onto the conveyor belt. As Scorpio reloads, Harry shoots. Scorpio rushes away. Rumbling along on the conveyor belt, Harry grabs an overhead beam and swings himself off to resume his pursuit. Beside another conveyor belt, Scorpio stops again to lie in wait for Harry as he enters the tunnel. Scorpio shoots, tearing splinters out of the woodwork. Harry returns fire, hitting the corrugated iron ceiling and showering Scorpio with dust. Scorpio charges up steps and barges past a worker wearing a gas mask. Scorpio spies someone fishing by the side of a nearby lake, then whips round and points his gun at Harry through an opening. Harry ducks out of the way, then re-emerges. Scorpio shoots, misses, slides down the banister of a wooden staircase, and stumbles towards the lake. Close behind, Harry emerges from the ramshackle wooden building and gives chase. Scorpio grabs the young boy he spotted fishing by the lake and puts his gun to the boy's head.
Drop the gun, freak! I'll blow his brains out!
Harry takes a few steps closer.
Drop the fucking gun! Huh?
Panting heavily, Harry lowers his gun in resignation. But then raises it again. The shot throws Scorpio off his feet. The boy is thrown aside and scampers away. Harry advances on Scorpio, his jaw clenched with wrathful intent. Scorpio is sprawled on a rickety wooden jetty, clutching his upper arm, a small patch of blood gathering by his shoulder. Harry stands over him. Scorpio sits up and reaches for his gun lying beside him. Scorpio freezes, gaping up at the barrel of Harry's gun.
I know what you're thinking, punk. You're thinking, did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Now, to tell you the truth, I forgot myself in all this excitement. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Scorpio suddenly lunges towards his gun. Harry fires, and the shot throws Scorpio off the jetty into the water. Harry lowers his gun and steps down onto the jetty. He stares down at Scorpio's lifeless body floating in the dingy water, strands of his unkempt hair now plastered over his deathly face. Harry slips his gun back into its holster. Harry gazes moodily out over the water, fishes out his wallet, and examines his police identity card. He takes out his police badge, a gold star emblazoned with Inspector SF Police 2211, and studies it closely. He flings the star into the water, turns and strolls away. An aerial shot shows him as a minute figure against the bleak surroundings of the quarry. Dirty Harry was a Malpaso Company production. ITFC audio description was by Adam English.